is the ego blocking in the self, and ego we cannot tackle with fighting, but with peace of mind. When you're relaxed, you can release your ego. While your mind is active, you don't want to give up ego because you think it's very asset you have. Mind will fight. But when you relax, you will see it's easy to give up the ego, relax it, release it into the love of God. And God takes over. When in relaxed condition, you release your ego, your tremendous consciousness in you begins to open up. And that will give you all the understanding and knowledge how the universe or the world works. Not that should not change. The question is, how? If books and magazines, newspapers and cutting of crores, trees would solve this problem, long back would have done it. In my humble opinion, how is to be answered from me and you? If I can change myself, if I can be awakened, if I can be released, if I can relax, I've done my best. And that's a tremendous job. But it's much less than if we were to go to change the whole world. And if I'm repeating myself from some other satsang, excuse me, but you see what a beautiful mathematics it is. Each one of us has only 1% to change. That's the only duty we have. Mathematically, it comes to billions. If everyone does that, or most of us, the world will change. And that's, in my opinion, right education. You don't have to change 10 people, just change one, each one of us. And that very person is with you, not only with you. I'm repeating myself, not only with you, but with you everywhere. In your bedroom, bathroom, living room, office, on the road, park, in your dreams, in your sleep, everywhere you're teaching. That person is with you all the time, meaning you have so much time to apply to change that person. If you watch your activities and feelings and thinking. It's not a tremendous job when you begin to do it. When you want to do it, it's difficult. Because we are used to now, habituated to look outside us in others. Therefore we find faults in others. We are not habituated ourselves to looking at our own self. If we were to do that, we might find a lot of jobs there, you know. It's not everybody's same, bad or good, that's not the point. Whatever it is. Just 1% changing, only 1%, that person 24 hours at your command. At your hand. What a beauty of God's mathematics. You think God created so many people? He created one man as a model and multiplied it. That's what he said. That if you have understood or realized yourself, you have understood all. If you have peace of mind, you have achieved your own. You'll find peace everywhere you go. If you found out your love inside you, everywhere you'll find loving people for you. Be sure. Exceptions apart only. An exception is proves a rule, always. It's a grammatical sentence. Exceptions are created in order to prove the rule otherwise. Those are not generalized notions. If you understood yourself, you have understood all. If you have known yourself, who you are, you have known the whole universe. If you have found your peace and love and joy and beauty and whatever in you, you will find it everywhere. Everywhere, that's the word. It's all pervading. Then you'll see the whole world is beautiful, if you found the real beauty within you. We have tested these experiences. When you have peace in mind, wherever you go, it will be peaceful for you. But that means, now you may raise a question, but that doesn't mean the peace has reigned all over the world. No, but we're talking about people, not simply two people, not you and me, but everybody. Just work upon yourself, the person you have at hand everywhere, in your sorrows and happiness, in your bedroom, bathroom, office, friends, enemies, everywhere. That person you work upon. That's the easiest way to change the whole world. If others don't do, then I'm again slipping. Am I doing? If I concentrate on that, I have no time left to think if others are doing or not. I help them if they want it, but I don't climb on their necks to do it. When you want to extinguish fire, you bring water, you don't bring fire. Well, I might be repeating one anecdote. There was a good person or holy person sitting in tropical country where sometimes they don't have the full dress on the shoulder. He was leaning against the wall. It seems when a scorpion came on the wall. He was talking to someone and bit the shoulder of that holy or good person. He simply took that scorpion and put it out somewhere. The other man said, at least now you can you're a holy man, you could forgive the scorpion, but at least now kill him, in a sense that he may not do that same nasty thing to somebody else. And do you know what the holy man replied? He said, he did his job, I'm doing my job. It's the way of looking at it. It's up to scorpion to bite, it's up to me to forgive. He just took the scorpion out somewhere and left it. It's the way you look at it. He's at, he might be bitten there, of course he was stung, but he's at peace. How many scorpions will you kill in order to avoid this malady in the world? No solution. Not that we should not kill if it's a menace, if it's a plague, you know, you have to do some things. But in normal daily life, how many things should change for me in order that I should have peace? I discovered long ago that I'll have to wait eons to achieve my peace if I had to wait outside me to change. This is spiritual magnitude we have to develop in our human life. Leave aside what Jesus did, because we may not be able to do such great things. That if one body slaps on your one cheek and give the another one, but at least if you don't want to give the second cheek, at least tolerate it. But that will create indignity, insult, injustice in the world. So, what are you going to do? Go on slapping others in return of slap, or forgive or love? Which is a solution? How many reactions to the actions contrary to what you received have solved the problems of the world or the life? These don't seem to have solved. How many voluminous books on legalities we have, rules and laws, everything intact to maintain justice? Where is it? For example, which way we should go? We have to defend ourselves, that's right. But if something happens, what would you do? You love the person or hate a person? If it's persistent, will you avoid something, situation only, change the situation? These things, the prophets, the enlightened people, don't think that they always delivered this only because they could do it and didn't mean for practical life of human beings in society. I believe otherwise. That they may demonstrate in their life something you and I could not do, but the virtues are the same. They didn't preach that holy man could forgive and not the human beings in society, as if there's a tit for tat retaliation in the normal human life. And that's producing more problems. As if we are trying to extinguish fire with fire. We can conquer hatred only with love, not with hatred. Reaction produces another action again. Therefore, they multiplied forgiveness and love, not out of weakness, but at the point of strength. As a big brother, you forgive the children. They did wrong. Of course they do wrong. But how should I meet with the situation? By hatred, by competition, by overriding them, or by what? By criticism or by compassion? Mind subsides, but not by reaction. Mind settles down with relaxation, which means giving up. Let go. That brings in peace. You see what troubled Pharaoh in Egypt during Moses' days? Maybe I'm putting it differently than you might have heard. That it was a simple matter. Hebrews were slaves of Pharaoh, 40,000 or whatever. And Moses, when realized that these are slaves, wanted them to be released from Pharaoh's clutch. And Moses by that time had realized God within, like saw God in bush of fire and things like that. As a matter of fact, Moses didn't come back to Egypt to fight with Pharaoh at all. Though he could, if he wanted. He simply appealed to Pharaoh, release these Hebrews, you know. These 40,000 Jews, just release them, just allow them to go home, whatever their home might be. And Pharaoh refused. He simply said, Moses, let my people go. Disobey, let go things. Had it been accepted by Pharaoh, Pharaoh's own dynasty would have remained. He wouldn't have been crushed into the Red Sea. This is always, when we react, we don't understand. We're disturbing peace. At the same time, we're creating end of war. At a future death. When you sit down in meditation and contemplation, you'll see the mind has many thoughts, good and bad, negative and positive. To solve those problems or negativities or whatever is not wanted, if you are going to fight with your mind, trying to avoid, you'll never succeed. But when you begin to subside, settle down, relax, release, let go, the mind begins to be peaceful. That's the way peace will come in the world. What is true of the mind is true of the world. It's a yogic great aphorism. What is true of the mind is true of the world. I'll put it otherwise. What is true of the world is true of our minds. If you can bring peace of mind, of your mind, the same process will be for the world peace. We cannot say individual, I can do it on a national scale, we have to have patriotic wars. That will never bring peace. Patriotism as a great clutch for the nation, as it any clutch for our own minds. Long back, it was in the early stages of nuclear things, probably that was early 60s, when there was a huge conference of the international things about nuclear. The topic was seeds of war. And there were speakers and speakers and everybody trying to find diplomatic answers where the seeds of war are, and there were too many agreements to be signed. And one person got up, he said, I think the seeds of war are in our minds. So long they are there, would produce the wars. What's true of the mind is true of the world. So how will you let go of the mind in order to be peace? We have to let go on the world scale, and that's what Jesus, Buddha and Krishna say. It's hard to do, or hard to believe, but that's the only way. Let go, forgive, love, be compassionate. You won't lose anything. What if, suppose somebody took away your coat? Not that you should not go to police or not, but question is, on the larger scale, if you are going to get that man punished, on one side you got your go back or not, God knows, that man got punished. Legally, justifiably, according to karma theory, well done. But on the spiritual scale, no. If you had taken your coat, give a cloak also. Now, we may not be able to do these things because we have not gone nearer to it, that's all. We have not believed that by losing one coat, we should not lose a peace of mind along with it. When you wishfully give coat to some needy person, you don't feel bad about it. Why don't you think that way? That means thieves will come more to steal more coats? I don't believe that. They don't too come often to take our coats. Let me give you an example. Again, it has to be a holy man. Who else will do it? You know, one holy man, and they don't have many possessions. He was meditating in his hut, and he had a bread kept by somebody. When he gets up from meditation, he will eat dry bread. And in the meantime, some another hungry person happened to pass by, and he saw bread lying there at the back of the holy man who was meditating. And he quietly crept in and took the bread out and ran. In this hustle and bustle, some neighbors got up, and even that holy man got up. They saw the thief of bread running away. And then this holy man, whose bread it was, he began to run after him. Now, people got surprised. Being a holy man, renunciate, and you know, this great guy, for a piece of bread, dry bread, he's running after him. And they asked, sir, why are you calling him and running after him? Just bread, we can give you another bread. He said, no, he took a dry bread. I wanted to apply butter on it and give him. How far you can go? Depends what consciousness we're using. Not that everybody can be that renunciate holy, but there are virtues inside this. If we believe in our prophets and those messengers and higher masters, what you call those astral beings or so on, angels, if we really want them to help us of higher energy, higher consciousness, we have to open ourselves. And we cannot open without being let go. That doesn't mean you take out all your closets and cupboards out and just throw away on the footpath to give to everybody. Well, if you could do that, that would be nice too, but not that. But suppose you happen to lose something. You have to defend yourself, true. How should be the attitude? Retaliation, reaction, revenge, punishment, or hurting? Or forgive, let go, be compassionate. What if he was your child? What if he was your brother and sister? How would you act? When your child does number two or one in your lap, take it easy, don't you? Thinking he's your child. And all his skirt is gone, boy. You have to again dry clean it. But if somebody else in a restaurant or a waitress happens to throw the water on your skirt, boy, the whole restaurant is on fire. Unless you're a good person, you'll go to the manager and complain. Not that you should not, but what should be the attitude? Difference is this: he's not mine. The child was mine. When you love someone, you forgive. When you're a stranger, you retaliate. So we raise the consciousness. That waitress or a being sitting near in that restaurant with me happened to do wrong, which my brother could do, my mother, my disciples do that all the time. And if I love them, be compassionate to them, how would I take it? Whatever may happen to the world, at least I have done my duty. I should not lose my peace of mind, at least. Thief came to take away your certain thing, or he spoiled your skirt or wore your pants. He didn't tell you to give your peace of mind to him, but you lost your peace because you're feeling a loss. You don't love him. You're not compassionate to that person. How many people we should forgive? I assure you, if you believe my experiences, not too many people trouble anyone. That's my experience. And in spite of not being compassionate or loving, do not still people trouble us or not? They do, no? Our own family people do. People divorce. The only one begotten wife and husband they divorce, which they promise they will never do. They procreated children together. They said, we won't ever be separate. And they said 1,000 times, I love you. What makes them to divorce? That loss. At least one of the partners is lost always. The one who wants to leave is happy. But the other person, boy, she or he, whatever, is finished. To them the world is afflicting. Happens right before our nose. Your own son, your own daughter can trouble you. How should we look at, how should we have the attitude? To have the peace of mind, we have to let go, be compassionate. You do your duty, losses do happen. But they happen in spite of this philosophy of compassion. And if you have peace of mind, you're a monarch. And beyond that, actual king of kings, they call it. And in Greece, there was Saint Sage Dionysus long back during Alexander's days. And Alexander went back to Greece after conquering the at least part of the world. And he died after that soon, but the story is that Alexander was very devoted, a lover of philosophers and scholars and good people. Dionysus was, during that time, they say, as the text goes, he used to, in winter, sit in the tub of water, and in summer he used to sit under the sun. You know, these holy people are always crazy, you know. Yeah, they want alternative energy, you know, and kind of against the establishments and against the tradition. So the Dionysus used to live outside the city, and that time was summer, he was sitting under the sun. When you like to be in a tub of water. Alexander, well, that sage wouldn't go to anybody. Somehow he was self so peaceful, settled, and one point had drawn with him. He had no need to go to anyone, to a king or monarch, to anybody. He was well inside, well settled person. He didn't need anything, he didn't want anything. So Alexander had values of these people. He went to see him with few of his attendants. As the text goes, I'm repeating, when Alexander went nearby to draw the attention of Dionysus, Dionysus didn't look up. His head was down in his own contemplation, as sages would do, and didn't greet even Alexander. And he was withdrawn, indrawn, peaceful, and cut off as it. And Alexander went nearer and nearer to draw his attention, but Dionysus wouldn't lift up his head. In the meantime, Alexander came so nearby, his shadow in the sun went over the Dionysus. Then Alexander spoke. He said, Dionysus, is there anything I can do for you? Then Dionysus raised his hand and said, stand out of my sunshine. He didn't need anything. He was in peace. Whole world, king of kings you become. Kings go and, you know. It wasn't arrogance. It's just a self-settlement in such a peaceful manner that you're not wanting. Of course, Alexander understood. He was lover of scholars and philosophers. He knew the value of them. Many other kings would have just kind of cut off his neck. There are stories like this, many. When you are at peace, you are king of kings. You don't lose, really. Few things we lose in life, we lose anyway, even if mind is disturbed, don't we? We plead to the wife and husband, please, honey, don't leave. We have lived together 20 years, please. It doesn't work with some couples. So peace of mind is its own satisfaction. When something is lost, let that thing go. Keep your peace intact. Not too many people trouble any person. But if we carry in our mind that disturbance, then we are in trouble all the time. This all peace of mind, though we started, I don't consider peace of mind as the goal of life. It's a must. But peace of mind or relaxed attitude is needed to live the life of higher consciousness. God's life. Peace of mind is necessary. Therefore we forgive, let go. Therefore we love and be compassionate, to keep the mind in peace. As if they are our own brothers and friends and children and parents. If you stretch the point in a spiritual way, that's why we, then actually by that method we come to oneness of all. That's meant by oneness. When whole world is your family, there are no strangers wherever you go. That you don't help only those whom you know, but strangers too. If you can. But before that, we have to help ourselves. If I have transformed, I can dream the world to transform. If I have my infirmities, imperfections, they are going to reflect upon my life. It's not something you can do in spite of you. What you are, only you can express. If that is true, your imperfections will express in life, and they do. That is what creates wars and battles and quarrels. So if we can purify that part, believing God is looking at us, then we'll change.
If I have the tendency, or when I become peaceful in the mind, reality walks out the back door.
Reality of this world, you mean? My experience is otherwise. I see it more clearly, the reality. It changes the perspective, no doubt. The reality walks out that back door, the reality you knew, that's true. But now the reality may be manifesting to you in a different way. That's my experience. If you hold on to the reality you know now, then you are saying as if that's the truth ultimately. Perspective changes simply. The person you knew was good or bad may now look differently to you. So the earlier reality no doubt leaves you in a way. But the new reality dawns. Try it. Yes.
Like I was there and I slipped back.
I understand what you're saying. I would have said that 30 years back, but my experience was different. I know what you're meaning. What you're saying, implying rather, as if you are losing control of the situation by being peaceful. In other words, if I'm right, within a human being, everybody, trying to control the situation is a tendency always.
And that a tendency of ego?
Sure. It does create doubt in the beginning, as if, you know, peace of mind and things will lapse or reality will go from back door. I understand what you mean. But real reality doesn't do that, actually, no. Because the consciousness opens up in peace of mind, you see more clearly. There may be perspective of reality changes. Earlier one as it was different thing. But then you don't lament at that point, because now you're knowing it better. That's the whole thing. Let's say God we believe in, worship in a temple or a church, or read the holy book. But that's one view of God. But there's quite higher views of God, where God touches you, gives you inner voice. His hand you could see, and then the life changes. It's a normal life of believing in God, going to church, temple, or worship. That's one way. The higher touch, where God speaks to you within, or you see the hand of God in working, or you hear His voice, and then that God is total different reality than you knew. One reality is on a traditional level, you know, book or a holy place and things like that. That's one reality. When you go deeper or higher, reality changes. If you still go higher, then you get Christ consciousness or Buddha consciousness, pure consciousness. Then third, that's vision. Revelation, they call it. There are three stages. One ordinary way, as we talk about worship and holy books, holy places and so on, tradition, believing. Second, where you feel some inner voice coming to vibratory touch of God, something, some inner voice, that's higher reality. And that may contradict the things outside. And the highest is, of course, vision, the revelation, where you see the vision. If you have read the life of St. Francis, for example, his own church denied him. Ultimately, he went into and retired in some cave or somewhere where he got blind or something. And then he had a Christ conscious revelation. He saw the light. But first church, even on his Franciscan church, denied him. They covered, rather, captured his power as if he's the one who started his church. What I mean is, he didn't mind. He had inner revelation, he had Christ consciousness, he was happy with that, he was blissful, even though he was blind in the end. Reality changes simply. He didn't care for church whether it is his or not, you know what I mean? He just didn't care. Otherwise people on the lower level will go to court to win over. They will fight the case. Reality is different. That time Saint Francis didn't mind his church going out of his hands. He didn't care for that. He had his own revelations.